And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, May 4th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 13. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Dennis.
And I'm Jeremy.
You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as Facebook. You can email us, everyone at InGameChat.net, or find our forums over at ColonyOfGamers.com. Don't forget, if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group where you can join up with us over there and play games with us and other listeners also. In the news this week, we're still inching closer and closer until what we'll find out for the next generation of the Xbox console. That happens May 21st. And then we'll get even more information. We probably won't get a release date out of that, but we'll get more information coming up at E3. And we may not even get release dates then. It may still say fall when they do that. Sometimes that happens. But we are getting release dates for some upcoming games that are going to be released on next-gen consoles. We're getting their release dates for the current-gen systems. And also telling words of, you know, launch titles for the PS4 and that games are coming out for other next-gen consoles. Specifically speaking, Watch Dogs gets a November 19th release on all the current generation consoles and PC, although this is Ubisoft, so PC might get delayed. They're trying to get better about that. But it is saying that it will be a PS4 launch title and will be released on other next-gen consoles. Plus, there's a little added mention there that it's getting extra content for Sony platforms. Exclusive content, 6 hours worth, which, if that's anything like the hours worth of Assassin's Creed that they gave us, it's really not.
They can keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say the Benedict Arnold missions in 3.
Yeah, that was
extra
really
content is extra content, and there's really no getting away from the notion that despite what people may have thought in the past or may have wanted in the past, I expect this argument to return, by the way. Having two major console publishers, owners, two major studios and hardware developers, there is still very, very good for the industry, and they're still going to be fighting with and against one another for exclusivity, mm-hmm. for that little bit of extra attention from the customers, and they're going to want just a little bit more, and to some people, enough people probably to justify the development of it, an hour's worth of content, whatever it is possibly enough to sway them one way or the other.
Well, I'd also like to point out, not the same way that that Benedict Arnold stuff for the PlayStation
which was
3,
what?
Yeah, I think it was 4 missions.
Okay.
You know, it was 4 missions. They said an hour's worth of gameplay. I believe they said it was an hour's worth. It's very hard to judge how long that stuff is.
Well, I mean, is that an hour's worth? Is it,
it didn't take me it didn't take me an hour to go through that content.
Were there, like, extra treasures you could go dig up or whatever?
No, I don't believe there was. No, because that would influence, that would benefit you more having not, you know.
Yeah, because that's usually what they use to pad out those, like, here's, you know, RPGs used to be, here's 100 hours of gameplay, and turns out, well, that's if you do every side quest and fight every extra boss there is that's beyond the normal storyline.
No, there was not, as far as that, the Assassin's Creed 3 content was concerned, it was 4 missions centered around Benedict Arnold, obviously.
Yeah.
But that was it. There wasn't, like, side missions
centered around Connor doing everything Benedict Arnold was ever known for. While Benedict Arnold sat there and had a tea or something.
But it was not
like the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was not an hour. Maybe it's an hour's worth for somebody else, but for me, it was not an hour's worth. It was 30 minutes, maybe less, to go through it.
Now it's worth somebody who had never played Assassin's Creed until they started up those extra episodes.
Yeah, so I mean, when they say something like this, it's exclusive 60 minutes of extra content. What they really should say, you get 4 exclusive missions.
Yeah.
They really shouldn't put a time limit on it. They should just tell, you know, because who knows how long it's going to take you.
Not knowing how long it would take knowing that it only took you 30 minutes, or even if you had said it had taken you an actual hour, I still think 4 missions is more likely to sell me on your content than an hour.
Right, exactly.
Worth of stuff. Because I don't judge by weight, you know?
Right.
It's not a market value per hour of gameplay. Maybe there should be, at least in certain respects. Maybe there should be actually some kind of, not direct correlation between length and price, but there should at least be some kind of judgment about it. That, and that is a separate argument. But if you're going to start selling me stuff based on how long you think it's going to take me to beat it, I don't know. A, you're wrong.
Right.
You're wrong. B,
you will always be wrong.
You clearly value time spent at some level, even if it's just extras, even if it's something on top of the original price, or even if it's priced as a DLC, you know. Maybe that's what they're trying to do. Maybe for whatever reason they don't like the idea that it's four missions, although that sounds like a much better thing to offer me. Would you like four missions or an hour more of stuff to do? I think I'd probably take the four missions.
Yeah,
that sounds far more interesting to
even
me.
If they're the same thing. It's just, you know, I don't really know. And I don't know what they're talking about here either. I find it very hard to believe that. Okay, for what it's worth, I think that Watch Dogs is going to resemble, down in its bones, I think it's going to really resemble Assassin's Creed. Not in terms of necessarily running around the overworld, although clearly they do look similar. Once we started to see actual gameplay, not the stuff that we saw a year ago at E3.
No, but
the things that were popping up over the past couple of months.
Yeah, at Sony's press conference, the thing you saw there.
That stuff really just, you know, it has a flavor very similar to what we've seen in Assassin's Creed. The same type of character movements, the same, the environments have the same kind of sheen on them. The way that you interact with the environments, the parkour, the free running aside, there's just, I can look at it, I can imagine the way I've played Assassin's Creed, and
you can put the Assassin's Creed overlay on it,
and
it still
feels,
it feels
close enough, which is fine. Close enough is familiarity. Familiarity is, you know, almost as good as a sequel, I suppose. But because of that, I fully expect the narrative structure to be similar. Again, not about revisiting genetic memories in a previous time, but just something about the way that they have proven to themselves and to everybody else, Ubisoft has, that they can tell a story in this particular way. I think it's going to be, I expect something like that out of it. So with a shell or a structure very similar to what Assassin's Creed does, I kind of expect Watch Dogs to do the same thing, all the way through to the point of dumping DLC on me. And I can't imagine that the 60 minutes or whatever it is that's supposedly exclusive to Sony systems isn't going to be mirrored in some fashion on the Xbox systems, or on the Wii U, or on the Xbox 360, or the mobile phone, or the toaster oven, or whatever other platform it's coming out on, because apparently anything that plugs into a wall is going to be able to play Watch Dogs.
Yeah, well, the Assassin's Creed content, the Benedict Arnold missions, those were released.
It's still PS3 exclusive.
Is it still PS3?
No, there's
it was
no
not on. It was not on PC.
I don't know.
I believe it was.
Okay.
I believe with the PC version, you got everything.
Yeah, I know 360 does not have it at all.
Yeah.
But they don't really, they're not really, I mean, they're not, if you're talking about who gets what exclusive content, you're largely talking about, I think we've all agreed essentially, like philosophically, what they're doing is they're paying for the other guy not to have something. Mm-hmm. They are not themselves paying for something exclusive. Exclusive doesn't mean we commissioned this work, we helped publish it, we added some money into it so that this developer, this publisher would focus almost entirely on something for our system. That's not what happens. They say, you're whipping up a bunch of extra stuff. I want to throw some money at you so the other guy can't have it.
Yeah.
That's the effective end result. And it's Sony and Microsoft, their consoles, their respective consoles, the PS3 and the 360. That's where the battle is. Nobody cares about the PC. They just don't care about it. Ubisoft in particular does not care about it. They barely acknowledge it. They've only recently stopped manhandling it where DRM
with
stuff
the crazy
is
DRM on it.
And we talk an awful lot about how it's inevitable 100% track record of them not releasing it day and date on the PC, you know, at the same time on the PC as they did the console. Although that may not be true anymore either, since they released Far Cry 3.
Yeah, that's true.
Day and date with the consoles. But the point is, I thoroughly expect them I don't expect whatever that 60 minutes of content is to show up on the new 360 or the old 360 mm-hmm. or whatever. I do expect those things to have their own version of something, is what I'm saying. They will have something, and I fully expect DLC to be prominent in Watch Dogs. If I'm looking far enough ahead, I fully expect Watch Dogs to inevitably be ruined the same way that Assassin's Creed 3 has, by the unnecessary, unwarranted yearly updates.
Drawing out of a franchise.
Or sort of crushing, exaggerating storytelling where there is no story to be told.
Exactly. That sounds like you're specifically speaking of the Tyranny of King Washington or whatever that was.
I'm speaking of everything that's happened since Assassin's Creed 2. Honestly, fun as Brotherhood kind of could be, and as much as I've been told by people who can't be bothered, you know, to just ignore the franchise, that Revelations was great, except for all the things that weren't great about it. And then how they actually managed to supposedly tie up the story with Assassin's Creed 3, but then not really do it either. It's just, they lost the thread a long time ago, and they pretended they still had hold of it, which is the worst thing. Mm-hmm. If they somehow could have just evacuated the story and just said, oh, okay, so it's whatever. Now the game is going to open up into something much different, and we're just going to keep making them because you like doing what you do.
Yeah.
You like the assassin stabby stuff. You like climbing on buildings. You like doing all of these kinds of things, evidently, because you keep buying the games. But we're not going to pretend to have hold of the story anymore. That I would have felt better, because the only thing I found particularly interesting after 2 was the story. That's where they really hooked me. That's where they left me.
It was.
They left me hanging on a hook at the end of 2.
And it's interesting to point out is that after playing 3, after finishing 3 now, and after having time to think about it, I go back and I remember what I told you. Well, what I told everybody on the show was like, Brotherhood, if you can't play it, you should at least watch the story elements.
Which
you
were
it,
what?
You need it for that ending.
Which was the beginning and the ending.
It was the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
That is it.
If you look at it in a whole, the sum of everything, it didn't matter. It really wasn't. I kept thinking, wow, that's really important. You really should watch this. And then I showed you the ending of Revelations as well, because I thought, you know, it's not necessarily as important, but here you're keeping up with some of this side story that's going on and this overall sort of thing. And then in the end, though,
it didn't matter.
Completely worthless. Just did not matter. It really did not matter, story-wise. Brotherhood introduced that great concept of the Brotherhood that they've carried over, and I enjoyed that.
The concept of the Brotherhood. I would not go so far as to say it was great.
I enjoyed it. I liked having it.
You can enjoy it. That doesn't make it great. That doesn't even make it a good addition to the thing. It literally was there to pad out your time.
Oh, yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah,
they made you dependent on the Brotherhood to be able to complete certain missions. The Brotherhood in terms of you being able to call in momentary support of some form or another to help kill everybody around you before you got overwhelmed. They made you dependent on that so that you would spend an enormous amount of time training up your Brotherhood.
Yeah.
It was completely unnecessary. There was no story to it. There was nothing that helped illuminate the world or the concept of the assassins as a guild or a group of people as a society of their own. You know, it didn't make it better. It was a gimmicky little gameplay thing. It was least offensive in Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
It was hardly functional in 3.
Well, you're right. In 3, they did force you to, because
you had to do a lot of side quests just to get one member.
Well, even when you got your members, though, I remember there was there were certain, or maybe while you were doing the recruiting missions, I think at the end of like a recruiting mission, it was like, okay, now use the cloak ability where, you know. One was call in the sniper. You had to do that. The other one was,
disguise soldiers.
Distraction, sniper, that sort of thing. It would force you to, like, here's a new ability.
Being forced to use new abilities.
Yeah, right.
There is nothing in the world I enjoy more.
Meanwhile, it's like, all I need is, like, have a dude come in and, like, stab somebody who's not paying attention.
Right, in the sense of the whole thing, you know, it made you feel like, we've said this before, where there's no feeling. There's no feeling, no sense of vulnerability. You are a machine that can take care of yourself,
yeah,
basically. And there is no great threat to you.
Well, to get back on point,
yes,
we're talking about Watch Dogs. The reason we're concerned about it and the reason we make the obvious comparisons to Assassin's Creed are... One, they're self-evident. If you have played Assassin's Creed and looked at everything that's been on offer for Watch Dogs, I would say that it's obvious at a glance,
yeah,
that the two of them share some kind of DNA. What it'll actually turn out to be, I'm open-minded. I am hooked through the cheek and throat where Watch Dogs is concerned. I'm on board with it. I absolutely am. I am less interested every time they show me something, which bothers me a great deal. The way they presented it, the way the game was announced a year ago, was a perfect form of hype because it was very nearly devoid of it.
Yeah.
They didn't make... There was no fanfare. There was no grand exposition.
There was no come see this trailer for this new game we got coming.
Nobody came out on stage from the development team with a t-shirt with like Watchdog stuff blazoned all over. We couldn't even figure out if that was really the name.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they just showed some stuff. Yeah. And here's a man in the rain.
Didn't you skip the Ubisoft conference?
Yeah, I didn't see it. All I heard...
had to get to the...
I got to the Sony press conference, but that's all everybody was talking about because he told me about it when I was on the phone with him. Or I don't know if
I texted you, yeah, and yeah. I was like, lots of giant capital letters and bad words and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, what about that? And you're like... What is that?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
And then, like, other convention goers started coming in.
Everybody in the Sony camp who was mingling outside before they could let you in, who had got to see that and were walking through, they were talking about what they had seen. And I remember sitting down with some of the developers at Naughty Dog when we were waiting for the Sony thing to start. They said, "Yeah, I heard about that," because they weren't over there either.
Yeah.
And we watched it on one of the guys' phones, just sitting there watching that trailer. He was amazed with the way it looked. And again, we were amazed with the way it looked.
I was amazed with the way it looked. And like I said, every time they've shown it since, I have been less amazed.
Yeah.
I'm actually very disappointed that they aren't... I'm not an unrealistic person. I know why they're doing what they're doing. But I'm very disappointed that it's coming out on current-gen consoles. This was one of the original points we were trying to get to about this game, is that... New games on new consoles. Like, the new stuff is going to come out, and it's going to be great. Both of the systems are going to be great. Which one you buy, I think, is largely dependent on which company's philosophy you most agree with. But we don't even know what their plans are for their individual system. Sony's is still just a framework of an idea in everybody's mind. We'll learn more at E3. Microsoft will give us their framework of an idea on May 21st and then probably give us more at E3. Which is going to make it a really fun summer moving into fall as we learn all about what these things can do. It's always fun. The new systems always provide us with something interesting, and they sort of elevate your excitement. You know? You find a lot more reasons to start thinking about, maybe I can find $400 or $500.
I know, and this is really. But, I mean, you get around your friends and stuff, and you talk about this stuff. This is really the first time that we, as what we are, has ever gone through a new console release.
That's true.
You could say the Wii U, but nobody ever really does that.
Nobody cares about that. But bringing the Wii U into it, and it's maybe the... No, I won't even say that. That Watch Dogs is being released on all consoles.
On all of them.
Makes business sense. But everything about it you were really hoping it would do, that it would abandon all of that ballast, all of that weight, all of that drag that the old consoles bring along. Mm-hmm. This game, whatever it is going to be a console game, and it's going to be a last generation console game.
Yeah.
That it will show up on PC, that it will show up on the PS4 and the next Xbox, matters very, very little. Think back to...
There's still development constraints that have to be taken into account. Yeah. It still has to be a game that can run off of a plastic disc.
This goes back to some of our discussion last week when we were talking about, you know, should they make skippable stuff so that people who don't have time to play games, that sort of thing.
Right.
It puts a limitation on your dev staff to say that... I know while you're making this, also keep in mind we have to also make this run on all these other things. I'm no developer by any means, so I really don't know what all that constitutes. I don't know what that means for them.
Well, what it most likely means is you target to the lowest common denominator. You target the PS3 and the 360, and then you add features on that the others are capable of.
Yeah, because the Wii U, they're going to have to. I say they're going to have to, but you have to make use of the second screen.
No, they don't have to.
They don't have to, but
I think like an italicized "have to" is in order. I think that I don't know that it's really possible to have an agreement where you build something on that machine and don't create something specifically for that tablet. That's the whole point of the system, and that's going to be at the heart of Nintendo's agreements with these people. But
it's almost like if Microsoft were to say that from this point forward, your game has to have some form, even in the least, of Kinect.
Ability
type of stuff. So,
if the Kinect was more core to the experience, which, hey man, it may be. We'll find out in about 3 weeks or two.
I think a lot of people are expecting that to be the case because they just feel like, and again, this is going to just get off into a discussion that we're probably going to get back into after a break, but it feels like they invested so much in that it's going to be an essential part of the next of their next console. It's gonna have to be packed in or built into it some way. You can't sell it as an ancillary to the next generation console.
Right.
You've got because as it is now, it's a split market.
Mm-hmm.
People with Kinect, people without Kinect.
Right. Right.
Once you make that a part of your next generation console, then you can tell your developers everything has to have something involved with the Kinect, even the least slightest little bit. Voice control needs to be, you know, something like that.
Well, speaking of the next consoles, I think that's one of the interesting things you can draw out of this announcement is that they say that it's coming out on the 19th for all of these systems.
Going back to Watch Dogs.
Right.
Yeah.
And that it's a launch title for the PS4, which tells us that more than likely the PS4 is not going to launch before November 19th because it's extremely unlikely they would release the game for PS4 before all of the other systems.
And it's very unlikely they would bother releasing or announcing the release date if they thought that it was still possible that it could come earlier.
Right.
They just simply wouldn't bother. I thought the announcement of the date was a little strange. Didn't exactly understand why they would do that. Why right now? This honestly could have waited a minute until E3 when you didn't have to have an asterisk at the end of the announcement to tell me, like, also, like, a, you know,
other
PS4 launch title
consoles,
whenever that turns out to happen, and other consoles. Not that we know there's any other consoles coming out or anything. I'm just saying, if there are, we'll be there. You know, it didn't seem right. The timing seemed a little bit strange. It seemed a little bit unnecessary. There are still too many questions about it. It looks like it's going to be a fantastic game. I do trust them, particularly when launching something new.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make that point. When launching something new, I trust Ubisoft to do very engaging things, to tell a really engaging story, to be really enigmatic and desperately cool. It's their year-over-year bone-crushing, you know, steamroller treatment of the same thing that drives out all interest.
Yeah.
This game is worth talking about because I think it is going to be that first best step across all platforms to give us the best comparison of performance on new systems, performance on old systems, theoretical top-end performance on the PC.
Exactly. And it's a new IP.
Teach us the most about how they plan to monetize additional content on the new systems. It could be the best instructive moment about what moving across the threshold from one generation to another means right now.
Yeah, I completely agree because if you look at what else has been announced for current and next generation consoles, it's been sequels, Battlefield 4 and the next Call of Duty, which is neither of those are two new IPs.
And that's assumptive. You don't even need an announcement about that.
You don't, but it goes to your point saying that Watch Dogs will be the
It'll be the test.
Yeah, it'll be the one. It'll be the one that everybody looks at to say, "Wow, this is where we're headed with this." Whereas, you know, I mean, Battlefield or whatever, it's still building on old on previous stuff. You're getting a new IP, you're getting a new story, you're getting something that feels fresh. Mm-hmm. Even though it's got that sort of similarity to the Assassin's Creed, it's still fresh. The Call of Duty announcement was November 5th is when they're doing their releases for current gen consoles with next generation platforms at an unspecified date is what they specifically said. So November 5th for that, November 19th for Watch Dogs. Somewhere we're getting a PS4 and a new Xbox. I wish they'd just tell us the name.
2 more weeks.
You know, exactly. Well, it would be quite, if they would just give the name so that when they do this, they can say that instead of saying other next. I agree with you on that. It sounds so, you know, if they exist, we'll put them there.
Right.
They will exist. So anyway, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll have more of In-Game Chat. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. We had left off talking about next-generation consoles and the games, release dates, that sort of thing. And with the time coming up for Xbox's reveal, or Microsoft's reveal, May 21st, and then, of course, E3 almost a week or 2 weeks later, when we're going to get pretty much all the details we need, which, you know, without maybe not price or maybe not specific release dates, we really don't know, but it's the last few weeks of us discussing it and making our predictions and speculation on it. And the internet's doing a good job for us with that as well. But some of the things that we've seen come up is just... it's not ever been good news for Microsoft.
Not lately.
Yeah, it's really not.
There's a real sense of... One of the things that we like to do on the show is... We represent actually a really poor segment of the gaming population. We're all very old. We all have very specific opinions about how things work. We don't really play a full spectrum of the games available. We've
been through a few of these things already.
We have been through a few of these things already. We've gotten cynical, and not in a hateful, ancient grognard sort of way. We're
more skeptical than cynical.
Yeah.
We know the tricks. I say we know the tricks. They continue to make new ones, but...
Yeah. When you refer to the console cycle, there really is a cycle. The cycle is in the expectation. The cycle is in the development. The cycle is in the news. The cycle is in the hype. It's in the types of releases. It's in the eventual failings and constraints of the system. And certain things in the cycle become more eccentric over time, more exaggerated over time. And it makes it... Maybe not easier to make accurate predictions, but it certainly makes events seem familiar, and it makes you more likely to think you know what you're talking about. So we are perfectly self-aware. We're not prognosticators or futurists. We're not analysts. We don't actually intend to convince anyone that we know for sure what's going to happen, even though, in a broad sense... generally speaking, in terms of how the business and the industry and the hobby all develops, we're pretty good. On the specific points, maybe not so much.
We're confident that we'll be wrong 90% of the time.
Right, but it's that 10%.
Yeah.
It's that 10% that we always strive for.
Trust me, I'm still holding on to when I made that prediction about Crackdown 2. When I was absolutely right about that prediction, ever how many months ahead of time. I'm still like, I called that, even though it wasn't a really great game.
But the stakes are a little bit bigger.
Oh, they're huge.
We've already talked about why this matters at all. Why consoles themselves aren't particularly interesting when you view them in a vacuum. If you just look at them and consider what's the best possible thing I could get for my money. Buy an old console and build a new PC. Mm-hmm. That's your best bang for the buck. That's going to get you the most possible things, particularly now. There's never been a better time to buy a new PC, and it isn't because of all of the new high-powered games. It's because of the broad spectrum.
Yeah.
And so you look at a console and you think, what's the point? They're just charging me $500 again for the same garbage. But that isn't exactly what's happening. Like it or not, they are huge business. Huge. They're a leading end of the business now. So how the world develops, even on the PC, as angry as it makes a lot of people, how this entire thing develops is driven by what's happening with these consoles. And you'll remember, what, 5-6 years ago, the prediction was the two-console market makes no sense. Sony and Microsoft fighting against one another makes no sense. Console exclusives makes no sense. It should just be a bunch of games made for a single console, and that's the best thing for the market, best thing for the customers, best thing for the companies. This thing that we have is a dying... It's a dying form of business, which is just... It's not true. It's just simply not true. And what's going to be fun isn't how much better the graphics are going to look. They're actually not going to look that much better. The, you know, your diminishing returns are really starting to become obvious. What's going to be interesting is that, I mean, they're both going to have essentially some of the same core architecture. So the space that's left for them to fight over, it's like that 5% in politics, you know? Most everybody is either over here or over here, Democrat or Republican. There's only a little tiny bit in the middle. The battleground is very narrow. And in technology, that's also the case. There's only about 5% of difference that's worth fighting over in one place or another. And when there's so little, the battle becomes very desperate. And out of that desperation usually comes something very interesting. Maybe it's catastrophic, but it's interesting. And what I think here is that in a very Sun Tzu kind of way, when the stakes are that huge, when 90% of your money just gets you to the starting line, right? When Microsoft and Sony, for the most part, are going to be pretty much even in terms of technological grunt, raw power this generation, what's in that 5% or that 10%? What's in that narrow battleground that they're each going to be doing? And in that Sun Tzu kind of way, the battle has probably already been won or lost. We just haven't seen it play out over time.
Yeah.
Or I would say at least this first several years of battle. And I think there is a kind of really rancid desperation coming out of Microsoft. I don't mean like desperately scrambling to come up with a thing or they don't know how to do anything or they don't have the money. I mean, they're on the wrong footing. I feel like their philosophical approach to the next generation and to their people, to us, to the customers, to every one of you out there who is maybe going to buy a piece of this technology, Sony's or Microsoft's. I feel like we're already out of the starting gate. Launch day is not the starting gate. The starting gate is the first day you see the first rumor. And Sony seems to be gaining huge amounts of goodwill for various reasons. I said months ago, I was like, I never said I want them to fail, by the way. I would like to clarify that.
I know.
I don't want them to fail, but I never wanted either one of these things to be something I wanted. Because it's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars in hardware. And hundreds of dollars in games. And I just... Boy, my life would be easier if they both just sucked a lot. If they were just both horrible things I didn't want.
I know.
Now every day, I think about, like, you know, launch time really is the best time to buy a system because you can actually just put money down over time on it. And if I'm really careful, you know, I think I could probably pick up a PS4 by launch day.
Mm-hmm.
And that evolves to the point of like, man, I can't wait till my PS4 gets here. I've already sold myself on it.
I did that last year for, I think it was the PS3. I did that. I did my pre-order, and every week I would go in.
You mean last time?
Yeah. Every week I would go into GameStop, or every 2 weeks, and lay down like, here's another $50 for you.
Yep.
Here's another, or maybe I think they took pre-orders so far out that I could do it about once a month.
Put a little bit down.
Yeah,
and exactly. Even so, and not that you can't do that yourself. Not that you can't just save your money.
Yeah,
but but having like doing that, pre-orders for a system before it comes out, and this is almost this actually really only works with brick and mortar stores. You just go in, you put a little money down, and they'll let you keep paying on it. It's actually a really good way if you're convinced you want to do it. It helps you not think so much about that money that you've put down somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't think Microsoft is going to fall on their face, but I think on May 21st, when they show us what they've got, when they show us their hand, I think you're going to see their desperation if you can read between the lines. And I do think you'll have to read between the lines. That's what you had to do during the Sony conference. To a lot of people, to the bro gamer out there, right? Whoever he is, there are several of them that I'm even good friends with. But to the bro gamer, Sony's conference was terrible, right? I mean, it was like really dramatically underwhelming. It didn't have a lot of really punchy stuff in it. It had a lot of really oddball projects up front. It was loaded with tons of things that seemed to be fawning over the developer, which, you know, I'm not even a huge fan of in general. But if you took it in context, if you looked at it historically, what you were seeing is that Sony recognized how bad a job they'd done this past generation.
Mm-hmm.
That conference was about correcting for every mistake that's made them suffer, every one of their own missteps. It was a mea culpa. It was a promise. It was forward-looking, even while being kind of indistinct and weird. It was the thing I wanted to see from them the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me excited. I understand that all of the flash wasn't necessarily there. And, you know, again, they may not do well at E3, and we may be wrong. But I see a corrective action out of them. And when you look at how rarely you see corrective action coming out of a company like Sony, that counts for more than I can say. Microsoft, just as a group of people, haven't been behaving that way. They have been they've been careless. They've been careless in social media. They've been careless in broad media. They've pushed desperately into unrelated markets in other parts of their company, but that's worth looking at. When you consider these giant corporations, it is not merely
they're trying desperately to leverage what they have.
Yes, exactly.
In order to get into markets that they see are growing,
right,
while the markets that they're currently in are shrinking. And that's sort of what I expect them to do with the Xbox: leverage it to get into all of these other things they want to be involved in. Because as far as they're concerned, they've got home gaming wrapped up. They don't need to do anything there to win, because they've already won.
They're trying to wrap up home entertainment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I think we're going to see most of, is all this, you know, Netflix, Hulu, ESPN, media,
which,
interact with your TV, put it on your tablet, all of these media interactions.
Yeah, which really ties into the rumor that Kotaku reported, was that they'd heard from sources that Microsoft is not where they want to be in the pre-launch development of the next system.
What does that mean? Not where they want to be in the
They are as much as 6 months behind in producing content for the new console. They canceled several internal next-gen projects because they were not coming together as they'd hoped.
They don't have any internal development to speak of anymore.
They have very little. They have a bunch of what we would have called second-party relationships previously.
They let go of Bungie. They shut down Ensemble.
Yeah.
Like, everything that they had, they just let go because it wasn't important anymore. The Xbox had won.
Mm-hmm.
It was now all about creating content deals for the 360.
And they had a couple of things rise to the top. Don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. I understand perfectly well that some of what they added was really, really good. I like being able to watch Amazon Instant stuff on the Xbox. Netflix is fine, although they're not even the premier Netflix console anymore, apparently, according to Sony.
Hmm.
All of that stuff is perfectly great, but they went a little bit too far. They were grabbing at deals that people just weren't interested in. Someone somewhere convinced them that I'm going to tweet and get on Facebook from my Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Which, maybe, I'm sure someone somewhere actually did that. But it tells me that they weren't cultivating an experience. They were grabbing at every deal they possibly could.
Yeah, they're What I think is going to happen is that they're going to neglect the core experience of their console.
The fundamentals.
The game.
They are neglecting the fundamentals.
Which is exactly what Sony did this past generation.
Yes.
And exactly what Nintendo did two or three generations ago.
Sony wasn't horrible this past generation. Their behavior wasn't reprehensible. They had... The PS3 was not even overpriced. It was adequately priced. It was a Blu-ray player. You couldn't even buy, in many places, a Blu-ray player.
For the price that they were charging.
For the price that they were charging for a PS3.
Yeah.
It had wireless built in, which is something that the 360 did not have. It had had HDMI right away, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Which is something that the 360 did not have. Mm-hmm. It had a Bluetooth controller, which... You know, for various reasons, probably added to the expense. It had backward compatibility right away. It had a built-in internal hard drive right away. Yeah. It had a lot of technology.
It was an amazing piece of hardware.
It really was and still
it
is, as a matter of fact.
It had all those memory card readers as well. I remember that.
It was a fine little box, and it actually still is. It suffered by how persnickety the hardware was to develop for. Mm-hmm. And in cross-platform titles, which is really where they lost in this last generation, this couldn't keep up.
Right.
Developers couldn't keep up. They had missteps with their network. And they've always been a beat behind, and this is something that we were right about last time. If it was anything Microsoft understood, it was how to integrate these different elements of physical and virtual networks. Mm-hmm. And they leveraged it just far enough, not to a grand place, but just far enough to keep them ahead of what Sony was doing. And networking... Be it friends or broader social, be it multiplayer voice chat, virtual store, downloadable content, streamable content. That stuff is a core experience of its own.
The party
and
system.
It's very, it's very hard to bring it along later and merge it with your existing system, which is why Sony just had the worst time in the world getting that off the ground. Even Microsoft, even Xbox Live was a wasteland for almost a year. It was a funny place for a really, really long time on the 360, I should say. Mm. We would come over to your place and play Uno.
I know.
Or the poker game, and that was it. That was like the only thing you could do on Xbox Live, you know, other than just your traditional multiplayer stuff. So all that growth is going to be built upon this time. And if you combine it with what each of them has learned with the If you want to take a speed test of who was really hustling this generation, it was Sony. Mm-hmm. Because they had so much of a gap to cover.
They had a lot of ground to cover, yeah.
And they covered it pretty well, probably as well as you could expect them to. And in certain respects, they pulled ahead. They pulled vastly ahead.
PS Plus really pushed them.
PlayStation Plus is a... I urge anyone out there who is on the fence about what these two different things have to offer to really, really look into what PS Plus can do, what it is, how perfect of an offer it is, and you are getting something.
To add to that is that Sleeping Dogs is hitting next week to the free game collection if you're a PS Plus member.
Yeah.
That game was released in August of last year. I think it was August. Yeah. August of last year. It's already good for you for free. I've gotten a ton of free Vita games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a PS Plus is a no-brainer for someone like me. But he's exactly right. If you're thinking about it,
if you're even curious, Microsoft is charging you. Xbox Live Gold is a cover charge. That's what it is. There is no way. For years now, people have been saying that it's foolish, it's childish of them to hold on to it the way they're holding on to it, but it's a guaranteed form of revenue. Mm-hmm. They've learned that they can lock you out of what is, frankly, the most important thing to a lot of people on the Xbox by just charging you money. With a retail price of $50 a year. We all know that you can get it much cheaper if you just shop around, but... Their, I guess, MSRP, or what you would call it, is $50 a year.
It's 60.
Is it 60?
Yeah, it was 60 about a year or two ago.
Really?
Yeah.
So, let me blow your mind again.
What a bunch of... Man. I didn't even realize that because I haven't... You know, I always got it through the cards and stuff.
Yeah. No, it's... they increased it. It was before PS Plus was a thing. Sony was still charging nothing for their online system, but Microsoft...
And it wasn't worth a lot, to be fair. We have to be fair. It wasn't that they were... equivalent to or on the same level at all.
They didn't
Microsoft
get a lot of,
had the advantage.
Yeah, from what I understand, there wasn't a lot of flack when they increased that yearly subscription price. I did not remember hearing
a lot of
rage.
What are you going to do? Stop playing with your friends?
Yeah, exactly.
You're already hip deep in their ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And no one anywhere just gives up that kind of revenue.
Yeah.
I think they may try to offer something better for it, but... In the meantime, they left vacant ground for Sony to come along and take advantage of. Mm-hmm. If you look at their behavior, Sony is in a much better position. They actually have momentum. They've spent the last few years trying to really become something people are interested in again. Now they're apparently interested in solving all the hardware issues they've had, eating crow where backward compatibility and your digital purchases are concerned, and they're going to still take body blows over that when people realize more and more the consequences of moving to the new platform. And that's going to be tough. Maybe it won't. Maybe that's what they're going to use the Gaikai service for. Maybe they've got it thought out. It's going to be tough, but they are really... Their positioning, to me, is not just an accident. And it's... I think we're all at least good enough at looking at facts. I mean, we all have a pretty... heavy narrative going in our heads at any one point in time about what these things really are, but Sony has momentum, and Sony has positioned themselves very, very well, and Sony has corrected for hardware mistakes. Sony still maintains an enormous number of really fantastic exclusives compared to what they never abandoned their exclusives in the same way that Microsoft did.
That
they never farmed them out. They never let the studios go.
They've kept Insomniac and Naughty Dog and all the rest.
That's that was in the other part, was that Kotaku said they had heard from an industry insider that Microsoft was aggressively trying to sign exclusive games for the next Xbox. Given the lack of internal development at Microsoft, their internal studios, while talented, are outnumbered by those of Sony and Nintendo, and that is exactly right.
Yeah,
Sony's got a lot of... This is only going to be on our system. Mm-hmm. And you're only ever going to play this here. And Microsoft doesn't have that. Or if they do, they don't have anything established. Well, Halo 4 was just released, so you really can't expect a launch Halo title to be released.
Yeah, and look at their track record with their first party. Look at, they let Bungie go, Ensemble, they shut down. That was Halo Wars, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was the last thing that Ensemble did.
They just released a Gears of War title,
It's, Not to say that they don't have exclusive relationships.
No.
But they're more complicated relationships. The relationship with Bungie is much, whatever it might be, is by its nature more tenuous than Sony's relationship to Naughty Dog. I can be certain that however well or poorly Sony did releasing essentially first-party games, console-exclusive games, over the past 6 years, they've still got that stable. They've still got it. And I look at Microsoft, and they've just been letting stuff run away. And the sense that I get from them is, well, we have this Kinect thing, and you can tweet from your Xbox. Right, you can listen to Last FM on this app and look at all these great ads we have. We'll let you pay $25 for an HD download of a movie. Like, look how awesome that is. Everything about them still to me seems even more childish than it did previously. And this is a very qualitative thing. And strangely, my mind has not changed one bit on this. When I sit down in front of my Xbox, I feel the same revulsion at the experience in general that I felt with Facebook before I canceled, before I dissolved my Facebook account. That same, I can feel myself being leveraged. I know that this is a world where my information and my privacy and where I choose to buy whatever it is I choose to buy is extracted from me all the time, and I'm comfortable with that. I can navigate those waters. With Microsoft, I feel a really grabby, handsy, disgusting effort in place to do those things. And no interest whatsoever in my personal experience. Only in how much of my on-screen real estate can be taken up by advertising. Only in what is the maximum amount they can extract from me for a video. They're still charging me points. They're still requiring me to convert my actual money to Monopoly money in order to buy anything. And Sony, by contrast, when I sit in front of them, I have that clean, professional, like their display is just very faint. It defaults to a screen of like what's new in advertisement, but every other pane is user-friendly and direct and cleanly designed. I can, you know, pay in actual money. Everything about them is much more professional, much more straightforward, and I feel like my personal experience with their machine is much, much better in almost every respect.
I'm also, as a PS Plus member, getting free games from them.
Which is
for paying.
A very, very simple thing, but...
You know, I am getting advertisements, obviously, but I'm not paying for that, but I'm getting the free games.
Or you do not get advertisements on every single section
exactly.
of your interface.
Yeah. Yes.
You get advertisements when you go to the store, right? And you get advertisements on the default thing, but the minute you move into the more functional areas of the console, you are not
then
still, you know, and I'm not saying that's the reason to choose one over the other.
Right.
I'm just saying when you're looking for various reasons to figure out, when you're trying to figure out what each of these guys is more likely to do to you, if you choose to invest in their system, I think Microsoft's desperation, their weird business desperation, the same desperation that caused them to develop Windows 8 and to put it on the Surface tablet and to convince you that that is the only thing worth having in the entire world, to gore you with advertising about it to the point where it's to nag you to don't forget, don't just watch your video. I don't want you just watching your video. I want you to download, you know, like this extra stuff so that you can be watching it on the Surface tablet, which you've picked up one of those, right? You've got one of those? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just my personal preference. I mean, I know Sony does it too, but they do it with a handheld gaming machine, you know? I just still feel somehow like there's an acknowledgement that the PlayStation is supposed to be about playing games.
Mm-hmm.
People have bellyached about there being a share button on the controller, which I don't even understand. Having played any amount of, what was it? The online gaming service that I...
No, not the, yeah, the
online.
OnLive.
Having played just a little bit of the OnLive, I could see that that was actually really incredible, you know? You may, I understand misunderstanding and... I hit the share button and it wants to tweet in all of the places and post to my Facebook. And I understand not liking that, but the actual consequences of being able to immediately distribute the stuff you're doing to other people is better than... They're not getting a fair shake on that.
Right.
And for the most part, other than a little bit of that, they seem to still understand that the PlayStation's a gaming machine. I'm not sure Microsoft understands that their console was supposed to be for games anymore.
No, it seems like it's the media box, not the...
Yeah.
Gaming.
I don't want a media box.
No.
I want a game machine. Well, anyway, that's going to wrap up this segment of In-Game Chat. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Going to go over some of the games we played. Actually, it's interesting because unsolicited, we got a review copy of Xenoclash 2 for Steam. And I really appreciate that. Wasn't expecting it, and we got it. And Jeremy took the reins to go and play it and try this out. And tell us about it, because I am not familiar with Xenoclash or Xenoclash 2. Okay. It's from Atlas Games, I believe.
Yeah, did you watch the trailer for it by any chance?
I did.
Yeah.
First-person fister thing.
Yeah, first-person melee, and it's just this weird...
First-person fister? That's an awesome genre.
I tried not to look at you when I said that. I really tried not to look at you.
Well, you've seen the world then, and this weird, bonkers, off-the-wall aesthetic that
yes.
it's got. Well, it's... Once you get into the game, it starts to make slightly more sense than it appears to in the trailer.
It all feels out of context.
Yeah, well, it is. But it is wonderfully weird and bizarre. The whole thing takes place in a world that's called Xenozic, which is this, like, weird dystopian Flintstones kind of thing. It's all the technology is based on stone and rock, and it's I've heard the term stone punk used for it. Like all of there's weapons in the game, but not a lot, and you don't have a lot of ammo to fire when you do find them, because the emphasis in the game is on the hand-to-hand melee combat.
Yeah.
But most of the projectiles from these are all rocks. Which I thought was an interesting concept. But anyway, the world itself is really cool. I started playing it and realized immediately, as I was completely lost and had no idea what was going on. It seems to take place immediately after the first game ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't play the first game.
Yeah, you had
so
nothing.
I'm like, I don't know who I am, what I'm doing. I don't know who you are or what this is. And I don't know how to play the game. Like nothing makes any sense. And I got a little ways into it. I was like, all right, fine. I give up. I tap out. I'm gonna go play the tutorial. Which, if you didn't play the first game, is absolutely essential. It teaches you not just how to play the game, but gives you the backstory from the first game. So you've got the context in which to understand the second game.
Mm-hmm.
The context being basically that your character's name is Gat, and like in the first game, he apparently he is part of this large family of brothers and sisters who are apparently the child of this weird bird-like hermaphroditic creature that they call the Father Mother. Anyway, something happens. He learns something about the whole thing and takes off and does all this stuff. Ends up waking up some weird ancient super advanced creature called the Golem, who ends up revealing that the Father Mother is actually a male that has just kidnapped all these children. And that's sort of where the first game leaves off in a story sense.
This like sounds like something out of heavy metal or something.
Man, it is
sounds great.
It's rocks, sort of, not metal. Thought he made that point pretty clear. Who made this?
It's can't remember the developer's name.
Ace Team.
Thank you.
Are the developers, publishers, or Atlas?
They also developed Rock of Ages, which had some. It was another weird, bonkers, off the wall thing on Steam. Not all that long
with
ago.
Rocks.
With rock, yeah, they have a thing about rocks.
Thing about where are these guys from? You said they
Chile.
Were Chilean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, anyway, where the second game picks up, like I said, almost apparently immediately after the first game ends, one of your sisters, Rimet, comes into this bar you're hanging out in where you just got into some big fist fight, of course, and is like, hey, the Golem has imprisoned Father Mother. Like, need to, like, go help break him out because you're responsible for this. And you're like, all right. So so the entire first act is based around you rescuing the Father Mother and then going and trying to track down all of these other brothers and sisters of yours who've gone off to find their original birth parents because you want to mount some defense for some upcoming trial for the Father Mother. Now, it's key to understand here that Xenozic is a completely lawless, uncivilized sort of anarchistic society, and the Golem, his sort of goal is to bring civilization and law and understanding of how to, he wants to sort of uplift Xenozic, and that's where a lot of the conflict comes in, because Gat is a very anti-authoritarian character. So the entire story arc is actually pretty good. I really enjoyed it. And that there's, like I said, the world's bonkers and off the wall, and there's a lot of mystery about it. And they deliver on a lot of that mystery in the second and third acts and do a lot to explain the history behind this world, which I actually didn't expect. I expect them just to be like, it is what it is. You deal with it, and it's just weird because it is. But I appreciated that there were reasons for things to be the way they were. They didn't give you a lot, but what they gave was really good.
It was enough to let you draw your own conjectures from it.
Yeah, some of it, if you're willing to read between the lines, I think some of it's pretty apparent. And other things they were very blatant with. But the problem with the story, though, was in the delivery. The characters, there were lots of characters that appeared to have really interesting backgrounds. Like the father, mother, your brothers and sisters. There's a whole another group of characters called the Corwid that you apparently hung up with in the first game. That they all live off in the woods and are very... Even among an anarchistic society, you just do your own thing, and that's what makes you a great person, no matter what that thing is. And so they're a very combustible element, and you can tell there's a lot of history with them, but you're never given a reason in this game to care about any of those characters. You never develop any personal relationships with them. I assume that it's drawing on whatever relationships were developed in the first game, but I was never able to relate to any of them. The other problem with the presentation is the voice acting is pretty bad. Some of it's pretty good. Gats is pretty good, but the other main character, Remit, was all read off of a page. Just the most flat, uninspired, unemotional voice acting I'd heard in a long time. And it was, even like Becky sitting over on the couch doing her own thing, had to keep commenting on how much she hated it when she talked. And she's with you through the whole game, so you don't get away from her. There's actually a two-player co-op mode that you can play online, a drop-in, drop-out, and where the other person can play as Remit. I didn't get to do that because I didn't have anybody to play with, but for the combat reasons, which I'll get into in a little bit, like that could be really good, I think. The level design... like I said, the world itself is fascinating and a lot of fun to look at and very pretty and well-crafted. And they talked about this one being an open-world game compared to the first one, which was very linear and track-oriented. But it's not an open-world game in any sense that I'd be comfortable saying open-world. What it has is really large hub levels that are connected to each other. Some of them are more open than others, but most of them, you're still going along a path that just has lots of branches. Okay. And for a guy who likes to explore a lot in games, they managed to create a really interesting world and make it not fun at all to explore.
So it's like you would try to explore and you'd be cut off in a way? Not in the way you'd
exploring
like?
Only ever really takes you to dead ends. There's nothing interesting at the end except that's how you get your skill points in this game. You don't actually level up by playing and fighting and doing the gameplay elements. It's like we created this world with all these areas to go to, so to reward them for going to these areas, that's where we'll put where you get your skill points and weapons. The problem is that's not rewarding the player for exploring. It's punishing them for not exploring.
Yeah.
They somehow managed to use the stick instead of the carrot to beat you for not exploring, and it became really just not fun, especially when you realize the only thing you're going to find is, you know, your skill point, and you have to go do it, otherwise you end up ill-equipped for the later parts of the game. That said, though, the combat itself is fantastically fun and very well executed. The melee itself, the punches are very—it's visceral. I hate to call it punchy, but it is. You can string these combos together, and it's fairly easy to do. But it takes you getting into a groove, and it's fun to get into that groove and start punching. It's so much fun that sometimes I get better and better at stringing my combo together, and I like this next one I'm going to set up and it's going to be perfect, and then after the second hit the guy falls over and he's dead. I'm just like, oh no, you took it away from me. I was having such a good time punching this guy, and now I'm you've let all the wind out of my sails. It was a bit frustrating, but in a fun way. In the larger fights, there's just a big... You can have big crowds of guys that you have to fight, but they give you all the tools you need to do crowd control and manage that crowd. The most effective of which is your AI partners. You've always got Remit with you, and you can have one other character based on how high your leadership skill is. You can recruit certain other characters to come with you, and they can do they're not good at combat, but they're really good at maintaining the enemy's attention, which is really what you need to keep them off of you and do crowd control. Yeah, that's exactly what they are. But you've also got these little skull bombs that you can throw out and explode. And when they roll out, like they all get freaked out and run off. So it's super effective crowd control. And what I learned early on is you shouldn't hoard them because they're very plentiful in the game. So just use them when you need them and you'll pick up plenty later. There's apparently some sort of chain attack. I never found the chain. I somehow managed to overlook it, which you can swing over your head.
Kind of like an area of effect all around
you. Yeah, and knock them back. But the other two are the most interesting ones. There's a gauntlet you get, which is golem technology, which will, if you point it at the sun or the moon or certain golem points of light, like it'll pull in this this energy attack that comes towards you in a series of explosions. And it's super effective damage. So if you can get all the guys on the other side of you and get them lined up between you and that point of light, you can deal massive damage to a crowd. And I really like it. It's got a long recharge on it, but it's a really good way of dealing with crowds. And the other one is another golem technology, which reminded me, you remember that hand glove device that the gold wore in Stargate?
Yeah, the little thing they slip on,
yeah,
inflict pain on other people.
Yeah, it's almost that exact thing, except the mechanic is that you can link two people or an object to a person, and whatever damage is dealt to one is dealt to the other for a period of time until the link's broken.
Oh, okay.
So you can do damage to two enemies at once. And it also becomes a mechanic to get you from one point to another in the world by managing to break things that are on the other side of barriers to let you through. There was one gameplay mechanic which, for some reason, was never explained in the tutorial. There's some sort of slowdown, and an exclamation mark pops up on the guy. And I played through the tutorial twice, thinking I just missed it. It's not that they never explain how to work it. So I just start mashing buttons and occasionally would do like a super impactful big fist in slow motion, which was really cool. I just wish I knew
exactly how you were pulling
what
it off.
What I was doing there. The problem with the combat isn't so much with the combat, but with the way the game handles your health and getting you from fight to fight. And that's, you have to pick up health in the world after you're finished with a fight, and health is not plentiful at all. And if you go looking for it, you may just end up in another fight. So invariably, every time you get to it, what's considered a major or a boss battle, you have some fraction of your overall health. Your AI partners are still healing up from the last encounter and are unable to engage. So you just get beaten the first time. And then you respawn with full health and your AI partner's rested. It would have been better if they just had it gradually replenish,
yeah,
or something other than what they did. Speaking of the death, though, the game uses a checkpoint system. And while it always saves just before a major fight, it doesn't do a good job of saving in between the smaller ones. So if you die, like, at the third fight after a string of them, so you may end up back a good ways having to sort of plow through all that again.
So it's the Bioshock Infinite checkpoint system, then.
But not nearly as well executed.
Okay.
Yeah. So, also of note, there was a couple of times where you have a quest arrow indicating where you should go to the next either major quest point, or there's some side quests you can do, of which the side quests were basically of no consequence. They weren't fun. They didn't deliver on any story. They were just sort of there.
They didn't even get you a skill point, maybe?
No, not really. They might get you somewhere around the area where there might be one, but you had to go look in nooks and crannies to find the skill points.
Okay.
But the side quest ones looked identical. and there was nothing indicating if you, so you could have, I think I only ever had two side quests active at once, but there was no indication of which arrow belonged to which side quest. So I was like, well, I guess I'll run to one and see if it's the one I'm more interested in doing, and sometimes it wouldn't be. So they did some really good stuff in the game. It's a really weird and atmospheric game that does the combat really well, but it's just got too many flaws for me to seriously recommend it to anybody. But if at any point somebody's looking to play something that's really unique and bizarre, and you the combat is really good, it might be worth a look, but I'd only pick it up at a sale.
Well, good. Thanks for the review on that. Thanks for playing it. And about how long did it take you to go through it? And
I spent three evenings on it. I'd say probably about 10 hours. It retails for $20, so it's a decent length. And I didn't do much of the side quest stuff. I mostly just went through the story.
Cool. Well, thanks for playing it. Appreciate your
glad to do
review of that, and appreciate them sending us a copy over so that we could take a look at it and get it reviewed as well. One of the other things in the news there, hardly any of us got any chances to play anything. James's work, I was on vacation. Dennis hadn't played anything either.
Al's finishing up old stuff.
I popped in just a little bit of Injustice last night, but not enough to. And I'm not a fighting game. That's when RJ comes back, if he wants to talk about it, he's been playing it.
No,
that's the guy.
This isn't a fighting game, so.
Yeah, well, I meant Injustice.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I put Injustice in the 360 last night and played just a little bit of it. But like I said, RJ's our fighting guy, so
yeah.
When he's on the show, we'll get his. Because I think he's played it. We'll get his interpretation. Yeah,
I was playing Zombie U, but that's. Old hat.
You have a Wii U.
I have a Wii U.
You're the only one of us who has one.
And I did not buy it. It was a gift from gift to my wife from my older brother.
Yeah, we didn't get a, you know, so. None of us, you weren't, God, you haven't been on the show in forever.
No.
And so when that launched, we had nothing to really talk about because none of us had it.
And I wasn't interested in it, really. The only game I saw on there that was even interesting was Ubisoft's game Zombie U, which was a launch title, because everything else was either it's this game.
Everyone else was games you've already played.
Yeah, it was games really 6 months ago. It was like, oh, maybe there's something new that can go on the Wii U tablet or whatever the name of the controller is. But Zombie U was interesting because it was they were saying you only had your survivors only had like one chance to make it through. You would essentially be starting as a new one every time one of your guys got bit or got taken down by the infected or undead, whatever you want to call them. I think they were called blighters in this one because it all takes place around London.
Yeah, but outside of the game,
well, come on, really?
Yeah,
it takes place around London. They're called blighters.
Yes,
man. Can we just agree that they're all zombies? Whether it's T-Virus or the Supernatural or, you know, they're hopped up on goofballs, it doesn't matter. They're zombies. Like, can we just... I just don't understand the weird part of the zombie fiction industry where we all have to come up with our own name for the... I don't know.
I think it's just them trying to be memorable, which is not necessarily working.
Memorable is not hard. Memorable for a good reason is hard. Just... What's the name of the game? Is it Blighters U? No. It's Zombie U.
Well, all those are used interchangeably. I think Infected is the one used most.
Yeah.
But...
It weirds me out. It weirds me out that people just won't call them zombies. That's all. It's just when people call them something else. Not like people, but like people in fiction. It weirds me out, so...
Well, outside of that particular game, I mean, what do you think about the system?
Man, I don't know. I haven't even tried using it. It's just like...
Can you play Zombie U from the bathroom?
No, you can't, because it does depend on having both the TV and the Wii Pad active at once.
That's
you,
sad.
No sale.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the only thing that looked interesting to me.
Well, isn't that what they were trying to do, to sell me on it? Mm-hmm. Saying, oh, wait, no, does the girl who... Could never be considered a video gamer, by the way, in their advertisements. Does the girl need the television? Well, you've got the pad or whatever, so go play your game elsewhere.
And I haven't paid an enormous amount of attention to that system, but the one or two reviews for games that I've come across make a point to mention that, well, it doesn't actually have the separate pad functionality, so ain't that sad? And I'm like, seeing as how that's how you tried to sell me the system, yeah, I'd say that's sad.
Exactly. Yeah, it really is. I'm not sure about, like, the old games re-release, like Arkham City or...
Sure,
that's how they work with it.
Well, that's acceptable.
As far as I know, I don't think you could do it with Arkham City. I think one of the big games you can do that with is like Mario or Rayman.
Mario's an exclusive in.
Exactly.
Rayman, I don't think, has that even come out yet? I know they released something over that could be downloaded because it was taking so long to get it out there.
Maybe that's the case. Oh, that's right. They did. They pushed it back.
Yeah, they pushed it back, and then they were like, okay, we know we said it was supposed to be here, have some levels to play.
They pushed it back within, like, almost a week of the release. Yeah. They pushed it back.
Really?
Yeah, it was a big stink when that happened. I can't remember their reasoning for it, but I know they were going to release it on multiple consoles, and then they pushed it back, and all those pre-orders for the Wii U version... were kind of left stranded because they were like, hey, we were supposed to get ours, you know. It hadn't been announced yet for the other consoles, or at least a release date.
Yeah.
And when it did, they pushed it back so it could be released at the same time as the others. And there were a lot of disgruntled people, canceling their pre-orders and stuff like that. And so they put something out there for them as a downloadable situation. But, yeah, I don't know. The system itself just hasn't really...
Yeah, it's not getting the next Madden game.
It's not.
that would
work well.
I would work super duper well, I think. This is coming from a guy who doesn't play football games.
Right.
Well, I mean, but just thinking of his concept sounds...
That's what I'm saying. And I can't imagine that the system itself is somehow underpowered. The whole point was that the hardware is roughly on parity with the current gen stuff, right? Like, it's not a terrible slouch in terms of its hardware capabilities, so I don't exactly know what that is.
Yeah, there's also been no announcement for the next Call of Duty game on the Wii U as well.
Yeah.
They did not announce that. They announced it for all the other platforms, but they did not announce it for the Wii U. So, not exactly sure.
Yeah, there's nothing on there that, even Zombie was like, okay, I'm interested, but it wasn't a system seller for me. It was only getting this gift's like, okay, I'll pick this up now. It's worth looking into.
And the only way you got the system was out of a gift.
Yes.
So, something to be said for that as well. And I'm not knocking anybody who has a Wii U system. I just know for my personal preference, and I could say that for personal preference of everybody else in this room, it just wasn't on our list. It's just not something that we are drawn to. And I don't know. It doesn't seem beneficial to me to own one.
Well, I mean, that brings back around, look at when we're talking about, the next Xbox and PlayStation 4, talking about the exclusives. It's like, what is there going to be on the Xbox that's going to call me to that?
Yeah.
There wasn't anything. There was a Mario Brothers game on the Wii U, which we've had now, that's the fourth iteration of this particular Mario Brothers style, counting the 2DS titles and the Wii version and now the Wii U version. It's like, okay, but it's like I've essentially played that game. It's just new levels, essentially.
Without saying anything bad about their technology, they have very clearly designed that system around a gimmick. I don't want to use that. I don't even mean that word in the worst possible sense, but.
Because gimmicks can be fun.
They can be. They can be
good
and
well executed.
Yeah, I greatly enjoy what they do with Zombie U.
They can add to the game. But.
Right. But so it is the core of the system, right? That little screen and how it interacts with other players that you're playing with, other people locally, interacts with the game directly, or how it allows you to play the game
by itself. Yeah, because if it wasn't meant to be, they just pack it with a Wiimote.
Right. And my problem is that if I am giant publisher or game maker guy, I look at their console and realize, maybe not in terms of graphical power or processing power, but just in terms of what they want the system to be, I still, just like with the Wii, I have to go out of my way to make my game for you. You will absolutely want me to do something on that screen. And you want me to go out of my way to do that for a system that has sold essentially no version. Like, it has very poor sales. why should I do that? The margins are slim enough as they are. Thank you very much. I'm not even going to put Madden or Call of Duty.
They've made on a product that is upsetting. Only beneficial. Well, I say is only. They've made a product that is very specific to. Our exclusives are going to use this technology.
And but, probably quite well.
Yeah, and very good. But if you are a third-party developer and you want to have a multiple system release, you have to put in more time, more money, and everything else for development on this, because the way this gimmick works, it has You have to utilize it. Whereas I understand it's a not necessarily Kinect thing. Kinect is like, we'll just put voice commands. Or just very small. It can be the slightest thing as long as it has some type of Kinect functionality or something like that. But anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with more in-game chat. Welcome back to In-Game Chat, final segment of the show here. Wanted to hit some more news items that popped up throughout this week. An interesting one from Gearbox and Sega are being sued over Aliens Colonial Marines. Took a lot of flack when it was released. Well-deserved for what happened with that development. Just as a refresher, it came out to horrible, horrible reviews and just buggy, underdeveloped game, and then more information came out where apparently Gearbox didn't do a lot of the development on it. It was done by a third-party development house, and
so the final product didn't match what had been shown months previously.
Yeah, it kept getting delayed as well. Gearbox did not have time to work on it because they were busy with Borderlands 2, so they put it to this other third-party development house to build it. Stuff that was shown to media, to press, pre-release stuff, was Gearbox developed. The final game was very little Gearbox developed. And they caught a lot of flack for that. And finally, somebody decided to sue them for false advertising, which that's now grown into a class action lawsuit. Gearbox thinks, obviously, that nothing will come of this, but... is there merit?
What was Randy's statement?
It's specifically Gearbox's statement. It does not necessarily say that Randy has said this. Attempting to write a class action lawsuit out of a demonstration is beyond meritless. We continue to support the game and will defend the rights of entertainers to share their works in progress without fear of frivolous litigation.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
Frivolous litigation, that's a really energetic term, specifically designed. I feel very sorry that this giant company who lied to me about what their game was going to be is upset that they're being called on their garbage now. I don't necessarily like this kind of lawsuit, particularly if it's seeking damages. Mm-hmm. What I think would be a really excellent outcome from this is if it put us in a position where publishers were legally required to be forthcoming about the nature of what they're showing me.
Oh, honesty.
Well, not honesty, but...
Yeah, you want to know when you're being showing a...
I want you to tell me when you're lying to me. Yeah. That's actually what it is. That is not honesty. My understanding, I don't know if this is some provision, if this is a requirement of doing business in just the UK or if it was the EU. I can't remember. But in that general European-y place with the accents, if your promotional imagery or video isn't actually what the product itself looks like, you have to put a disclaimer on it. You have to say that, no, this is not... Yeah. This isn't the thing. This is just a video that I ginned up to show you what I want you to think about my game. Mm-hmm. This isn't actually gameplay. And that, highlighting something that is not gameplay and highlighting gameplay that is very specifically not what you intend... that gets a bit tricky. It's not about intention. If they're so desperate to show me their work in progress, then show me the work in progress, not in regress. It It's not progress to go from what they showed to the press to what was released to the public. Unless they started with a finished product and started taking it apart and making it worse. That's not right. If it's damages these people are looking for, compensatory or punitive, whatever. If they just want money out of it, that stinks. I think it stinks a little bit that they're probably only going after aliens because it's a hot issue.
Right.
Because it's in the news for being so horrible.
Yeah.
They all lie.
Nobody's going
all
after Bioshock Infinite.
Nobody's going after them, and they lied.
Yeah. No, they blatantly, but it was...
Well, they didn't lie by accident. They didn't accidentally create enormous sections of a game.
We looked at
that. They disassembled, picked apart piece by piece, and then put back together as a... You know, as something boring and small.
We looked at this. We did not see actual gameplay footage from Bioshock Infinite that was in the final game until October of last year.
Right. Now, there, again, as an experience, as an overall thing, we all love Bioshock. Yes, the whole world loves Bioshock. But it is filled with things that aren't good. And I think objectively, quantifiably... There are things in it that are bad. There are simply bad things in it. And we knew a long time ago when the much celebrated, you know, gameplay stuff was shown that it was just, even before we knew that that stuff wouldn't represent even the type of game you would play later, we knew that the specific things about it were garbage because nobody was playing the game. Nobody was actually playing the game.
No, they were just taking a walk through the road.
They were taking a walk through something that was very carefully calculated, very synchronized, very choreographed.
And someone else was doing it.
And that's not real. I don't mind that it's a bit of a sales pitch. I don't. But I want you to be honest with me that what you're doing right now is a lie.
It would have been... See, we didn't know any of these things until... until we had actually played the game. You know, we played through it, and then we kind of... After you get done with it... It's a lot like sometimes, it's a lot like movie trailers sometimes. After you watch the movie, you'll remember, wait a second, there was this part in the trailer that they showed that was not in the final film. And there were parts of the game that we suddenly realized after we'd settled down a little bit from what we'd played that, oh wait, this was not in the game. Yeah. Where was that fun fight
and
scene
that,
I watched?
Yeah. I think in particular, you know, if you want a specific sample for games, Metal Gear Solid 2. Every promotional release, you saw a snake going through the big shell, going through this, and then it turns out, no, wait, it's really this other guy with the
it's a bit
blonde
hair.
That was interesting because it was a lie of omission.
Yeah.
They didn't show you things that weren't in the game. They just selectively showed you things that only represented a very small section
of
the
game.
And
you can make an argument that it was there not to spoil the narrative twist. It's still a form of dishonesty, but I think revelation requires dishonesty. At the very least, a lie of omission. At the most, active misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to gamble that it's going to be worth it. But that's not what we're talking about in these other places. And it is a degree of difference between Aliens and Bioshock. Again, don't get me wrong, it was a wonderful experience. I also think it's perfectly fine to do what they did and say, you know what, our reach exceeds our grasp. Let's back off a little bit. Some of this stuff isn't working out. Maybe they play tested it. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. I will give them all the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And they draw back the scale a lot of the activities in the game. Reaching back to some of the cynicism and some of the cautious skepticism that we referenced in the first half of the show, I've seen this all before. I will grant the apologists everything they want to say. I will grant the love in... That, okay, the first stuff they showed from Bioshock Infinite, where you're actually fighting alongside Elizabeth, or she alongside you, rather. Everybody claims that, and everyone, you know, you shouldn't take it so seriously that wasn't what the game turned out to be. Everybody knows that's not what, that wasn't real gameplay. That was just something they put together to show the game off. Well, then what was the point? The more... I'm willing to grant that that wasn't real, the more we have to acknowledge that they were actively lying to me, that they were selling me on an idea that they never intended to have come true. But let's set that one aside. The stuff they showed that was, honest to goodness, real gameplay didn't show up in the game in that form at all. And there are very real indications that the narrative had changed significantly. Mm-hmm. But most specifically was the complexity of that overhead rail system, mm-hmm. and how basically none of that, and that was supposed to be core to the gameplay, to the mm-hmm. combat gameplay experience, how that stuff was essentially removed. The only places you ever played on the overhead rails were very, very tiny, you know, closed loops. They weren't terribly complex, or they weren't complex at all. They weren't interactive. Nothing moved on them. You didn't combat the enemy, other enemies on them. That is basically, it looked engaging. I was rapt.
I knew,
thinking about that. And then what you actually get in the game is the result of someone saying, most people are too stupid to play this. Most people don't have the patience to play this. Most people don't want to figure it out. It's too difficult to highlight exactly what they should be doing. So let's just reduce the complexity of the experience. Let's make it dumber. Let's dumb it down. And I hate that phrase, man.
Yeah, there was also the elements of
what they did.
There was also the elements of stealth that you might have hiding from Songbird.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember watching, I remember at E3 when they told us that the color of Songbird's eyes would represent
awareness
and certain things like mm-hmm. that. There was red, you're spotted, yellow, he's curious, and green, you're in the clear type of stuff. They would go through the different...
Some of that stuff is okay. Some of it is evolutionary. But a lot of it represents their desire to sell me on an idea that they are either incapable of developing or had no intention of developing. And when they show me something, even if it is very close to the game we will get, and I respect the need to be able to change things during the process, they didn't show me anything like actual gameplay. They showed me something that was a narrated, choreographed experience. I have long since believed that none of that is trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Not in the least. So, going back to the original point, nobody's holding Bioshock's feet to the fire over this, largely because, but everybody loved it anyway.
Yeah.
If everybody had just been... If they had pulled a bait and switch, if they had had highly developed assets that they used to sell the press and to sell the public on the idea of Colonial Marines, if they had changed that significantly, but it had still turned out to be a decent game... This wouldn't be happening.
No,
it isn't about false advertisement. Nobody cares if it's false advertisement as long as they are either thoroughly suckered or honestly entertained by the final thing. Everything about Bioshock that was bad is almost impossible to see through the bloom and the haze of how much time and effort they spent sculpting with laser precision. Every inch of Elizabeth, every inflection in her voice, every shade and shadow in Columbia. They didn't spend nearly that much time on anything else. They spent barely any kind of that time on combat. They didn't spend any of that time on Booker, who you inhabit. They didn't spend that much time on Comstock. That game was about Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And there was every reason to believe that no one was going to stop long enough to look at the flaws because they were too busy being enthralled.
Entranced.
Yeah, entranced, ensorcelled by Elizabeth. Just go to any popular forum that's busy worshiping Bioshock Infinite and look at how many of the pictures are about Elizabeth. How much of the fan art is about Elizabeth. That's what that game really was. And it's okay, because again, you don't really start to pull a lot of these things together until after the fact, particularly if you make one run through it.
Yeah.
So, I only mean to say, the ultimate experience there was interesting, if nothing else. It was engaging, it was fun in a lot of respects, it was challenging. It was neat to pick apart the details and try to find what the game was really about. It was an attractive-looking game. So they didn't have that particular problem. But overall, you could make an argument that there was just as much inaccurate content in what they were using to sell that game mm-hmm. as there was in Aliens.
Because they spent 2 years showing us stuff that was not in the game.
That wasn't in the game. Mm-hmm. And everybody was okay with it because everybody knows. Except when it's Randy Pitchford and Gearbox, who have become popular antagonists. You know, like he's swapping over to the Black Hat recently just because the internet says so. And because the game turned out to be crap. And because of the business arrangements they had with the other companies that they farmed it out to. And because of how they were spending Sega's money. I get all that. But that's not what it's about. If it's about false advertisement, if it's about misleading people when you're trying to advertise something like a game and about the ethical nature of what that means, I don't see a huge difference between what they did and what tons of other people have done, except for the fact the end result, the end product, stank. It was ugly and it wasn't a good game.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get them. We're going to get them.
And it largely...
I kind of hope they do, just so that everybody has to play ball.
Right, yeah. You're not... I'm not hoping that this guy or these people get money out of this. It's whatever. I actually hope... I hope it changes it for the better, the industry and the...
I just hope it changes people's perceptions of it and people start being more suspicious of what a game actually looks
like.
Well,
I was going to say that's the same thing because you get the GTA 5 trailers that were released. You haven't watched them. I watched them. They're only... it's just about a minute for
each
character.
You're going to agree that I probably don't need to watch them.
No, you don't. No. I watch it and I look at it and then I look at some of the screenshots that people posted from the trailers and stuff, and I said, "Yeah, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't mean to be the stick in the mud and the party pooper on the thread that's I love this and it's doing what it needs to do and that sort of thing, but I've had it happen too many times before to where my I have that jaundiced eye to look at it and say that I hate to use this. I'll believe it when I see it."
Yeah,
I hate to use that, but
yeah, well, I mean, you look at the like little bit of cinematic sequences in there. It's like that's not what I'm going to have when I'm playing the game.
And right, and
if
I'm
it's
getting
anything like previous GTA.
Yeah, and I'm getting the laundry list.
And even if it is, you're not playing the game during a cinematic sequence. So thank you very much, but I'd rather see gameplay.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And I'm getting the bullet list of like here's all the features that you're going to have, and I'll hold you to that because well, it's on the internet and it's going to be there forever. So when I go to play it, I'll go back to that and look at this. Did you meet those or was this something that you put in there to whet the appetite and then
was this purely a marketing show?
And then took it away without letting anybody know, even though it may be a small thing. He still said it was going to be there. I don't know. I know it sounds cynical. I know it sounds, grumpy old man. But this is what it's done to me over the years, is that I just have to look at this and not... I can't,
But this is still coming from a group of people that really enjoy hype and excitement.
Well, there's the...
But it's what generates that excitement.
Yeah.
If I see a gameplay video and it is very clearly being played by a robot or a human playing the part of a robot, if it is choreographed, if it's unadorned by all of the things on the screen that I'm actually going to see, such as the example from Beyond Two Souls, the gameplay stuff. We tried to watch some gameplay. Mm-hmm. It's a half an hour long video that we skipped around in until we actually saw something that might be confused with gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
But there were no on-screen prompts, because why would you put those there? That'll just uglify our video.
Well, there was a few for just her walking down the street, but the fight sequences and some of the
things. No. Those were indicators of something that could be done.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
That wasn't the giant pulsing press X to Jason.
Yeah.
That we're actually going to see. And furthermore, there was no exploring. That person was as much a robot as the robot that played the original gameplay demo of BioShock.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't looking around. It wasn't trying to walk over what is clearly the indicator of an invisible wall. It wasn't trying to walk down an alley that it clearly had the option to do. The player made no effort to click on every little thing. I promise you put that controller and that game in the hands of an actual person, that's what they will do. Until you try to sell me the game by showing me what an actual person will do, you're still lying to me. You're selling me an idealized version of the experience. And if you can't match that, because that's all this is. That's all it is. You're not selling me a bucket of content. You're not selling me possibilities. You are selling me an experience. Yeah. And if you don't trust that experience to be engaging when played the way a person is expected to after giving you their $60, then I don't trust you. And in everything that we saw, there were no prompts, there were no explanations, there was none of the adornment that I expect in a QTE-laden game. There was no exploration, and worst of all, there were no mistakes.
Right, exactly.
And in none of these games ever is the camera pointed in the wrong direction for more than a second. Does the person playing the game ever make a genuine mistake? This is what playing a game actually is. It's exploration, trial and error, discovery, collection, socializing, multiplayer, all of these different things. And if all of those are supposed to be the thing I enjoy, then why do they work so hard to keep it from me?
Yeah. Two other examples I'll mention is Assassin's Creed 3, when they had the bullet point of, oh, you can dart through buildings now.
Yeah,
only specifics.
Only
and,
specific ones, and it's,
and it's
all
always
automated.
The same two windows going through the same room.
Yeah, and as soon as you do it, it's completely takes over for you to get you through it. And then the other thing that I'll mention, and everyone will recognize this, is the Dead Island trailer.
Yep.
You know?
And I was never sold on that.
Well,
and everyone around me was like, what a beautiful trailer. And I was like, for what?
Yeah,
there wasn't a single indication of what a player would do. You were sold a pack of lies, dressed up, tarted up, like, and pulled out in front of you and made to dance.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was just a beautiful trailer, not a beautiful trailer for Dead Island.
And I can respect it for what it was. But I'm sorry, and I always feel bad when I say this, but they are lying to you all the time. Whether it's Gearbox or whether it's Randy Pitchford, who the world is learning to hate, or Ken Levine, who they've only ever loved. And I'm not saying that their end result is the same, but I am telling you, they don't trust themselves, they don't trust their games enough, and they certainly don't trust you. They're lying. You can actually enjoy it much more if you just assume they're lying all the time. It doesn't mean that you have to hate video games.
And with that, we're going to have to close up here. That is it for us. Appreciate everybody listening, and thanks for downloading the show. And we will do this again next week. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.